You're listening to the Online Pastor Coach Podcast, the show that brings you new and fresh ways to connect with your digital church, with your hosts, Joey Santos and Jason Morris.
It's kind of interesting when you talk about the it's almost to me like in the online pastor arena is the modern day missionary, where in a way of, I picture an online, a global pastor like that, just traveling everywhere, just having that contact with people. Mm-hmm. And when he's not there, he's not disconnected. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's kind of interesting to look at that way, like to kind of have the big picture, big vision.
Yeah, it's like being an online campus, like an online pastor, is like the ultimate spiritual digital nomad.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it. You really can. Like even one of my buddies, Neil Smith, he left the church in Texas, I think it was San Antonio, and moved to New York with his family and still was online campus pastor from New York. Mm-hmm. You know, he was living in New York, churches in San Antonio, and it was a non-issue, because that's one thing about online ministry is that it's location agnostic. It takes the location barrier and the friction that location gives you and just removes it. So that's even a different way that I think a lot of pastors aren't thinking through when they do online ministry, like especially through COVID. They're like, they used it as a means of which to stay connected with the people that they were already reaching. And they probably didn't realize the new people that they picked up over this past year.
Mm-hmm.
That are outside the geographic reach of what they're currently doing.
Absolutely.
And they need to think through, you know, do I want to be geographically bound? And I don't know that we do, given what Jesus told us to do.
I know.
You know, go, you know, Judea, you know, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the uttermost parts of the earth. That's pretty big, you know, and I'm not to say there's lots of ways that one could interpret and apply that. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I'm right in my approach, because it takes all of us working together, doing their Jerusalems, wherever they might be. But I also believe that what the Apostle Paul did wasn't a bad thing either. Where most other people kind of stayed where they were. I don't know if it was sparked by what God did with, you know, persecution and the dispersion of the believers. I don't know if that was part of his plan or if it was just something that, you know, was a way that God redeemed all the crap that was going on. But one thing's for certain, it is a good thing to not necessarily be geographically bound. And I think that even a lot of these larger churches that are emerging as prevailing online ministries, whether you're talking about Transformation Church or Elevation or Saddleback or, you know, whatever, all of those people are realizing, you know what, we can get more work done and more ministry done outside of the geographic reach of any of our campuses, perhaps, than inside. And yeah, I think it's, especially in places and countries where, you know, there's persecution or there's stigma around being a believer or a follower of Jesus, that online ministry presents a way for us to be missionaries in ways that we could never do physically.
I think, Jason, I think it's interesting. I've been getting some calls lately, which is kind of funny. In the very beginning of this pandemic, the last year, that like March, April, I was having like 2-3 Zoom calls a week with churches. Mm-hmm. Like, talk to me about this online church, what's online church work? And it didn't hit me at first. And now hear you talk and hit me again, because I start getting a couple calls. And I was like, man, we are still far out from having the vision. And here's why I say that. Most of the calls I'm getting from churches is, listen, I want to get serious about online church. I was like, man, that's great. What do you have in mind? He's like, well, only 60% of my people came back in the building. There's 40% out there. I don't know if they're going to come back. I need to get this going. And I was, so that's what I'm saying. The vision is too geographically bound. Like this, right.
It's not only geographically, it's very bound, limited. But it's a maintenance strategy.
Yeah.
Rather than an outreach strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my mind, I'm like, if that 40% that didn't come back, have decided not to come back, that's on them. I've got work to mm-hmm. do.
Yeah.
And that work, I think, is probably more, the harvest is probably riper with the people who don't know Jesus yet, or who are not part of what Jesus has called us to do yet, than those who have decided not to come back. And really, those guys who decided not to come back, here's something that might scare people. And this is something that I talked to, you know, my boss about too, at the front end of the pandemic, was I told him, hey, look, we just got a whole bunch more competition now
mm-hmm.
online.
Oh, yeah.
Because before, there was a handful of churches that were doing what we were doing, and it was growing, but we were still, you know, kind of the oddball. Now everybody's doing it. So mm-hmm. not only are people connecting to our church, but they're connecting to other people's churches too. And maybe that 40% that didn't come back, they're at another church because over COVID, they were like sampling everybody else's church and they found one that fits them better. So I wouldn't necessarily look at online as a maintenance strategy. I would look at it as online as an evangelistic outreach and expansion mm-hmm. strategy. Whether or not they show up in my building or not, the point is that Jesus gave us a very clear job. Go and make disciples.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jesus did the Great Commission, there's nothing about a church service in there. In fact, you're hard pressed to find a church service in most of the New Testament, especially in the book of Acts.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, if the disciples didn't have a church service, like we know it today, especially like we know it today, but if they didn't have a church service for hundreds of years, they were doing pretty okay. Turning the world upside down without a church service.
12 guys. down to 11 at one point. You got to think, and it's interesting, you look at it, because I think churches are going through that phase. You know, in the middle of the summer, people start to come back, people start to feel comfortable, restrictions are gone. And this, what do you call it? I think it's genius, it's a maintenance strategy. It just doesn't last. And let me prove, I want to prove to people with my own experience why maintenance does not work. You know that we change our model, how we do online. So we completely mm-hmm. flip everything, right? So it's a total separate church service.
Which I think online is the way to do it, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you. We went there. But then we had that situation where people, like the churchy people, you scream at us because, like, I want to see the stage. I want to see what's happening on the stage. So we now offer both. We offer the online experience and then we offer the streaming from the stage. Let me tell you what happened the last 3 months. The streaming audience went down 300 viewers. And those 300 viewers has not been reflected on the online experience or in the building. Maintenance. That's the problem with maintenance, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Now, our online experience has stayed steady. Giving is going up. It's slow growth. It's a different approach. We're not trying to get church people at all. But it's a steady. And then you've got the house campuses expansion. We have 4 house campuses in Ghana, Africa. And I just talked with them, and they're talking about the challenges because they still hit pretty hard by COVID. They're not out of the woods like we are. And the guy we have there said, Joey, they cannot get together yet. So I have to get the iPad from one house to another every day so they can watch. And I was like, you're kidding me. It's like, no, because they usually get together on Sunday to watch the service, be part of the service around the iPad. And so because of COVID, because they cannot get together, one family watches on a Sunday, the other family watches on a Monday from the same iPad. And I was like, man, we're going to fix this. We're going to fix now. So I sent a message to the church via social media this week. And I said, if you have a used iPad, I need your cable. It needs to work on Wi-Fi. And I need it. People are going to bring it this Sunday. We already got people asking questions. And I told him, I said, we're going to send as many iPads as we can.
That's really cool.
And that could multiply those house campuses.
Yeah. What I'm hearing from other, like the stuff we're doing in South Africa, and what I've heard in Malaysia too, they'll do, instead of like a Sunday service, which requires like what you're thinking, and it sounds like what they're thinking, a Sunday service, they flipped it into kind of a daily devotional in a WhatsApp group. Mm-hmm. And so they create these little videos, these little audios, you know, stuff going on the daily, and people are coming to Jesus, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
Using a WhatsApp group. Like, it's basically a texting group, really. And it's that very simple technology that everybody already has that they're thinking about in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's genius.
It is. And I'm not trying to make any political statement. That's way far from that. I'm just saying, I think we're going to end up learning from other countries in the moment like this. Online opportunities. Because here's a question though, like as we move forward, as we get out of this pandemic, we start seeing signs of churches trying to create a maintenance plan instead of an evangelistic plan through online. But looking ahead, what's the sustainable online experience really?
Right.
Online church. And I think I want to make sure churches listen to the word sustainable, because online is not going to go away.
Right.
So what is the sustainable model? Which, do you know what I mean? Because
the only thing I've heard people do is have two things where they keep on doing what everybody's already used to, the big box Sunday weekly gathering for church people. And they let that ride because really that's where most of the money's coming from. Although I will say on both ministry models, the costs of doing online expressions are much lower.
Absolutely.
Like for example, I just pulled up the financials of our church, right? And I segmented it by campus. And the online campus is the only one making money. In fact, I'm under budget. And over the course of this past year, I've made the West Side as a whole, we're in like almost basically $100,000 surplus, right? From the giving.
Yeah.
And from what I'm spending, right?
Yeah.
But none of the other campuses, they're all underwater, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, and the reason why now they're bringing in more money, but they're spending a whole lot more too.
Yes.
So it's like, they've got a mortgage, they've got
exactly
an electric bill, they've got more staff for all the things that they have to do. And I got none of that, right? My bills are so low, man. It's like,
but see, that's the thing. When you change the model, and I start to look at that, the way we change our model, the argument before was, you cannot have online without this other infrastructure here. So the online—
You just proved that wrong though, because you're doing another one.
I know. So that's the thing. When you look at those numbers and you're like, okay, right now, if I just keep my infrastructure with the cameras and going to locations and shooting, because it's totally separate, we're doing it from the stage anymore. I don't need that.
Right.
Absolutely. Then you split the waters, and it's kind of interesting. In a way, I don't know. It's a warning sign, but
it's the new contemporary service. Is what it is.
Exactly right.
And it's just a different expression of worship.
Exactly.
That is creating this weird split, and
exactly.
There's churches out there that are going to do blended. There's churches out there that are going to have two different services. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing.
I mean,
it's just the new generation of what this is. Now, one of the differences being that is you're splitting not only the way that you worship, but your ministry model, as well as your business model. And so there's more things underwater that most people aren't thinking about that are vastly different. Because like, if you do like, you know, contemporary worship or, you know, traditional worship, well, you're still using the same stage. You're still using the same building. You know, you might have different staffing, but all of the underpinnings of the way that you do ministry is very similar. Whereas online ministry is different in many, many, in many ways. But you've already proven, though, that you don't need the stage to get the job done.
Oh, no.
And that's kinda the proposal I'm bringing to my guys, too, is like, I can already prove this business model works. I need more staff for the number of people that are coming. And I've got the money for it, clearly.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, can I do this? Will you let me do this? You know, and even some of the things where they're like, no, we don't have the manpower to pull it off. And I'm like, well, we could either hire them or we could repurpose them as it relates to like cameramen, video guys, all that kind of stuff. And oddly enough, we've been experimenting with it every now and then where we'll create a well-crafted, well-edited sermon with lots of B-roll and things that justify, it's not just a talking head. It's like a whole production.
Yeah.
Like, you know how the people worship, they're like thinking through every little transition and every song, all this stuff. If you think through the message in the same way, visually, people sit and they'll watch it because they're like, oh, that's really cool. You know, because your story showing instead of storytelling. And so there's a lot of things that we could do that way. And personally, I feel like for churches who are having a hard time managing two workflows, two worship expressions, two sets of staff, it can be a lot. And I get that. I would say, don't be afraid to like flip your, you know, your ministry model, because we've already experimented with it a few times. And most churches already have too. When they do an FM movies or something like that, they're practically doing it already. They just need to think of it differently. And it's like, okay, if we were to get into a regular rhythm this way, and shoot and edit and then premiere that video as part of the entire church service in the big box, well, that same video works great in the living room, in church, in the bar. I mean, if we were to take, like, for example, in your particular case, if you were to take your video that you play at church in the bar and play it in the big room, my gut tells me that people would be okay with it.
If
it's shot well, you know? And
so
that to me is like the flip that we need to do. If staffing and resourcing and time and effort is the bottleneck and the scarcity, because we can't do both, okay, fine. Well, then do the online one and let that feed into your on-site ministry rather than think of, oh, we got to do the on-site thing and use online as the add-on. It needs to flip. In my opinion.
Well, and I think we have experienced that. It is interesting to see today for us how many things it started in the online arena and end up spilling into the physical church. And and we've seen that, and we've seen people like start to kind of wondering, you know, does this need to be actually different for real in a physical church experience? And I think what people are starting to see, at least we're experiencing here, you know, we right now at the church of the bar, we got to have regulars between 40 to 50. If everybody comes every Sunday, we'll be around 60. But we had a baptism a few weeks ago. We got We got two more baptisms next week.
I had a baptism this past Sunday.
Here's the thing that I start noticing, and people are becoming very vocal about it. At the bar, people are becoming very vocal about This is church to me now.
Yeah. Like, that's a flip that needs to happen. Yeah.
And they are very vocal saying, what happened in the other building, I don't think I can do it anymore. Because I wanted this. I wanted the community. I wanted, and it's so interesting. The second thing, and I know pastors probably are not going to be so crazy about this, is that in this, on this model that we have, it doesn't matter who's preaching. It doesn't matter who's singing. It doesn't matter. They're like, give me the content and let's just do the talk.
Right.
They want to do the talk.
Yeah.
So it has been so interesting and good to realize that, you know, last Sunday we had 35 people. We had a big storm coming through. Mm-hmm. Right. So we got 35 people in the room. And one of the people to be attending the church has to move to Dayton, close town from here, 40 minutes, but it's going to be hard for him to come every Sunday. You know, he's divorced, four daughters, 20 years, military veteran. I mean, the guy's just, you know, getting back to life. And, but he's very active. He's not like, he works at a Harley Davidson store, very active guy. But he built that relationship there. He that's where he found his church to be a place, right? He was attending the bar, saw the church, the sign, came in, and he's part of it. And he's moving, and somebody at the bar came to me Sunday before service and said, hey, Joey, I know he said he doesn't need anything. He doesn't need any furniture. He got everything. He already ordered everything. But what about if we give him a housewarming party? So what if we collect some money? And we give him like a Walmart gift card. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's a great idea. So he was not there last Sunday. I said, great opportunity. At the end of the service, I made the announcement. I said, hey, we're going to make
that's
this
awesome.
We're going to make this very, very simple, humble. I got a unused coffee filter put on the top of the chair. And I said, just put your cash there if you want to donate. Just a little bit to give him a housewarming from the church, the bar. And next Sunday, I'm going to bring a card and everybody signs the card. We put the gift card and give it to him. And Jason, do you know what happened? He ended up with a $400 Walmart gift card.
What was his reaction?
Oh, he's going to get it next week.
Oh, next week. Oh, I want to find out what happened. I know.
This Sunday, we're going to all sign the card. But I'm telling you, if that doesn't scream community to you, I don't know what screams community.
Okay. So it's what's interesting about what you said was, and this is part where I feel like some pastors get real, you know, they get real anxious about, because you're talking about money. Mm-hmm. And we're okay. This is just like,
yeah,
this is just me talking, right? So I could be wrong and I reserve the right to be correct later. So there is, you know, we've been having conversations with Randy, and his son did an entire study and a paper in seminary on a particular business model. Every church has a business model. Mm-hmm. On a particular business model that runs in the house church style. Because when you're giving online and you're doing house church and giving online, sometimes there can be a disconnect with giving to your community that you're a part of. Because it feels like, okay, I'm giving for this content, but it doesn't really affect me or the person that's sitting beside me. You know what I'm saying? And so the thought is, what if instead of having a whole ministry model that's dependent on buildings and staffing and all this extra stuff that requires a lot of money, right? And so we have our online giving and all this other kind of stuff that happens to support that ministry model. That, you know, it works in certain contexts. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's a wonderful expression of church. There's just other ones we could do that also have different ministry models and different business models to support it. So what if we did like house church style, they're in networks and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm going to put a pin mentally in another idea too, with, you know, bivocational pastors of house churches. And when they give under the name of the house church that they're a part of. 80% of my giving goes back into a fund that my house church can decide what we're going to spend it on. 20% goes to the big box to continue to create the content and all that kind of stuff, right? It goes to central. So it's kind of the same paradigm as Joseph in the famine, right? If it was good enough for them to survive, I think it's probably good enough for us. And he ran the numbers on it, and it's completely sustainable. In fact, the big box will end up making money while people are feeling empowered where they are to meet the needs of the people that they're next to in their neighborhoods or in their school that their neighborhood happens to be in or whatever, right? So that's one thing. There's different ministry and business models that can work in those environments. Another thing is, you could probably look it up, apartmentlife.org, where they have people that are paid by free rent in apartment complexes to create faith-based community in the apartment community. So they do parties, they talk with people, they create relationships. And what it does is that it increases retention for the apartment complex owners. So they're not having this churn of people, because once they get into relationships with people, they stay, even if rent goes up a little bit. And so you could have like a bivocational pastor in every apartment complex in the country, right? Because he's partly getting paid by free rent in a parsonage kind of a deal. And he could be bivocational doing his job or whatever.
Yeah.
That's totally sustainable and scalable.
Yeah. I mean, it is. And I really think that's where it's heading. I had this young family start attending Church the Bar, four kids. And they're the ones that got us started in Church the Bar Kids, the cult. So ministry. So we have like ministry activities for kids at the bar. But we met at the bar during the week, just to get to know each other better. So my wife and I and this couple we met, it was so interesting, their question, because they said, so are you employee at the bar and you do the church here?
And the bar should probably pay you.
Because
my gut tells me they make a killing on Sunday.
They do. It has been very interesting to hear them ask the question,
right?
Because they did not make any association with a bigger umbrella on that end. It's church. And they came from a big church. They came from one of the largest churches in the area. And they're like, we thought it was so interesting to have you here all the time. And you know, in another thing, they hear me talk about me and the staff at the bar, because I speak at the staff meeting. Just last Tuesday, I speak in the staff meeting. Every staff meeting I there to give leadership encouragement. So I think they're noticing all this involvement in the bar, saying you must be an employee of the bar. And I think to me, what tells me is that presence, people start noticing the presence. Right. See, our church, our big church, have their own network of local charities that their church connected in. We're doing three or four events at the church, the bar. And all the proceeds, I wanted to go to local charities. So I went to our missions guy and said, hey, is there local charities you can partner? But I would like to be local around the bar. I don't want it to be, I don't want us in Mainville be helping charity in Mason, because it doesn't make sense. And after some, discussion and all that, it starts settling. Okay, there's some here that is not going to be a long-term partnership, but we can do this one-time thing. So that's fine. That's okay. And I had two meetings this week with those partners. So all we're doing, like one of the things we're doing at the bar, because here's the goal. Our goal at the church, the bar, is to connect with people that attend the bar. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a cookout. So we're having a service in the morning, and the whole afternoon is a cookout with a dollar burger, dollar hot dog, and 100% of the proceeds go to a local charity. So when people come and they see church at the bar having a cookout, and you give this money is not going to church, it's going to this local charity. Mm-hmm. Right? We're doing a church at the bar / monkey bar golf outing. So it's going to be as a fundraiser, and we wanted people to come and say, hey, money, church's not going to keep a dime from this. We're just going to send everything to just local charities right around, like one local charity, we're raising money for a back-to-school program. So it's our own schools in our own backyard, and you're going to be part of it. And what I wanted them to actually experience is that we honor what we say. We're here for the community.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And we want to make sure that we show them that we mean it, that we actually mean that we're here for it. But what's our goal? Is create connections. I just like, we're going to have our whole church represented there and more. We have our musicians and singers are coming to do live music all afternoon, and it'd be 80s rock at the bar. And it's going to be Church the Bar band. And we're just going to meet people where they are. Do you know what I mean? So, but the thing I tell people ask a lot about the Church the Bar. I say, guys, you got to understand, Church the Bar is a result of an online ministry. We still watch the online. The model is different, but that's what we do. So I really think, Jason, that as we move forward, I think helping churches to see that it's more than a maintenance plan, that actually this is actually a future of outreach.
Yes.
I really believe is the future of outreach. Is the online church. Is your new missions, you know, launching that? Yeah. And I think churches need to start to look at that. Jason, do you know what number one question I'm getting from friend pastors and churches? Where do I find an online pastor? Because that's interesting. They're trying to hire an online pastor. They can't. They cannot find one. Yes. And what I guess is, hey, you know what? My youth guy, he doesn't want to be youth pastor anymore. And he likes technology. He does so well on social media. I'm going to put him as, and I talked this week with a company that manages Google grants.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so Joey, 100% of the church that I talk with, they're like, I put this online as this guy's or girl's an online pastor. And now they're like, well, let me figure out what to do. I don't know how to do this job, but we're going to have to figure it out. And it has been really amazing. Like, have you heard this? Have you heard people? I don't know.
Maybe I've talked with a lot of people in Kansas City where they're getting, like you said, they used to be youth pastor. Now they're online pastor. That happens a lot. And they're a little clueless, and not clueless. They're they've got some skill, tech skill. They've got a good heart, and really, that's kind of all you need in a way. I think we make it harder than it needs to be. Where I find that a lot of people get stuck is they start with the church service first, and it is a it reflects the predominant, you know, model of church planting, where you start with the church service first. You're really planting a church service, not really planting a church. You're planting a church service.
Ooh,
hopes
that's
that
good.
You will make disciples, you know?
That's good.
But sometimes that works.
Mm-hmm.
I think increasingly it's less effective, especially in post-COVID world and post-Christianity world. It's easier and better, I believe, to start simply with making disciples online. And if you make disciples online, they want to get together.
Yeah.
Whether they get together online or on site, doesn't even matter. They will gather.
Yes.
When you have a gathering of disciples, now you've got a church. So like Peyton Jones' book on church plantology, I think is a really great way to do it. You apply a lot of online principles to that basic idea, and that's it. Yeah. Now, where I think a lot of existing churches, what they do is, because they already have a service, maybe they started off with like a launch team or, you know, a core group, whatever you want to call it, which in most cases, that's where you're really making disciples. And then at some point it like flips into church service business.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of making disciples on the side, but your main thing is doing the Sunday thing. And when you try to make that online, they'll naturally gravitate toward putting the church service online and then struggle with having online groups. Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen a million times.
Yeah, that's true.
And so what I tell people to do first is do your groups first.
Mm-hmm.
You can always add the service. That's easy. Do your groups, concentrate all your effort there. And then you got something that's actually sustainable, and you'll be making disciples that way with your online groups. And what's been great about COVID is that it's created an environment with which people are today more willing to get into a Zoom call than mm-hmm. they were pre-COVID. And and they actually prefer it in a lot of ways. So it's even easier to do online community in a small group setting. And one of the things I'm thinking is, wow, wouldn't it be cool if, because here's what I think would be like the next iteration of online church service. If you can't, you know, if you're in a hybrid model, a multimodal model, which is a thing, that's the vast majority. Mm-hmm. Then what if we were to make it more interactive, like more than the chat, like webinar, Zoom webinar, or something like that? So we're looking at people's faces while we're going to church.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There is a way to do that well. There's a few churches that I've seen that they have a Facebook service, a YouTube service, a Zoom service. And it's different in a way that some churches would do have like their traditional or contemporary service. Different mm-hmm. vibe, right? So if there were something where your church in the bar could be seen by other house churches and interact with other groups of people at the same time, now you're doing something that we haven't done before. And if you could take one of those like Zoom screens and throw it on the front row
mm-hmm.
of the stage so that the pastor is seeing faces of the folks that are joining online and seeing repeated faces, it's you're approaching the same effect that kind of organically occurs in an on-site setting, where you have a pastor and he looks over in the second row on the right and he sees the same family week mm-hmm. after week.
Yeah.
He develops some kind of a relationship after a while with those folks because he talks with them and they talk back and he interacts with them. You know, that's one thing we're missing right now with some of the current expressions of church, is that the guy on the stage doesn't interact with the guys online. And so you're forced to create a separate experience for the onliners mm-hmm. in order to get that. And that's important enough that it's worth it to do it. But for the churches who can't, I'm trying to think through different ways of having one thing kind of rule them all, which I understand will have compromises and will be suboptimal in certain environments. I get that. But if I'm going to put money on something or put my effort and energy in something, I want to put it on the future. I want to mm-hmm. put it in something that can scale and grow.
Yeah.
Instead of going backwards, trying to go backwards to what I was doing before that was on a steady decline anyway. That doesn't make sense to me. Why would we do that? You know, let's try to reimagine and re-engineer even the expressions of online church. Figure out better ways of doing it, because COVID has, you know, I was reading a book, you know, I've just finished, it was talking about how COVID has taken the market and has accelerated it a decade in a year. Yeah. So the things that were already occurring as it relates to retail, it would have taken us to 2030 to be where we are today because of COVID.
Yeah.
And if you think of it that way, it's like, okay, what is the church going to need to look like in 2030? That's what it's going to need to look like in 2022.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Oh, I believe it, because I think it's, I mean, you can see it happening, right? Oh, yeah. You can see it happening in retails, and you can see it happening on
education.
Education is
another one. Theater, yeah, the theaters. You know, what's weird is you can see little pieces of what basic church service would do in other sectors of society, like education, because we do biblical education.
Yeah.
We do a lot of things that theater does, you know, whether it be like plays or, you know, a movie or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of this, it's, I'm not saying it's the same. I'm saying there are similarities in other sectors of society. And you also have like concerts, you know, like music concerts and stuff that. And you have like other forms of like, you know, restaurants and that sort of thing where people get together and share a meal and that sort of thing. You take all of those together and there are elements of each of those sectors of culture that are present in what we would know as the, you know, modern church service.
Yeah.
Every sector has been highly disrupted, if not tanked by COVID. And we expect that church will not be affected. That doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. If you look at the ways that each of these different sectors are adjusting to the new reality that we find ourselves in, those are the new ideas that we should be experimenting with in our postmodern church expression. So in education, they're doing it all online. Well, we should be doing discipleship, biblical education online too, in the same kinds of, using the same kinds of tools and formats. HBO Max is a thing now, doing movies. Disney Plus is a thing now, making more money than Black Widow. They're doing more on Disney Plus. That should tell us something. They're creating experiences online for the living room that we should be thinking about that too, right? So you take all of those things, like even like the restaurant industry, right? I was like looking up on Google Maps the other day for like a burger restaurant, because I like that. And there was a ghost kitchen in and on the border that I didn't know was a thing, where, and this is fascinating, where it's a restaurant with no kitchen and no building. So what they do is they collect orders online and they go to a neighboring restaurant, fulfill the order, and DoorDash it to your door.
What?
Yes, they're called ghost kitchens. It's a thing. And I look at that and I think, whoa, what if we did church that way? Where we took somebody else's building, right? Just showed up, or someone else's, because you think about it, there are ways in which we can get things done in a distributed fashion without the kinds of infrastructure that we think that we need.
So these people can just let me go back. Let me go back, because this is interesting. So there's ghost kitchen. So
right,
they
Mr. Beast
take
burger.
The order.
Yeah.
And they go in some other restaurant's kitchen.
Yeah, they've made a deal with another restaurant and they say, can we use your kitchen? We'll rent out a space in your kitchen. We've got some of the same ingredients you do. We'll pay you for them or whatever, right? We just need the grill and stuff.
Yeah.
And so on my app, I'm like ordering a burger from Mr. Beast Burger, right? I got a burger and fries.
Yeah.
And they're like, they get the order. And there's a cook in the kitchen of on the border, not even a Mr. Beast Burger restaurant. It doesn't exist. He makes the burger, sends it off to DoorDash, and it shows up at my door. Now, I think it's Mr. Beast Burger, but it's not.
Yeah.
And here's the deal is that, think about this, with all of the church shopping that's been done online, right, for the past year, my gut tells me that there's a lot of sheep swapping that's going on.
Oh, wow.
Where absolutely. Where there's a lot of pastors are like, where'd my congregation go? They're at the church down the street or whatever. Or they're watching Elevation on Sunday or whatever. I don't know. They're still going to church, just not yours. Now, what if we had a house church pastor that was able to ghost chicken style or ghost kitchen style cherry pick the types of messages and content that his congregation needs, regardless of where it comes from, regardless of what house it is? I'm cooking it up with other people's ingredients. Do you see what I mean?
Well,
don't tell me this isn't already happening.
No,
right?
No.
We need to think about how we can make that happen. If it's already wanting to happen, how can we make that happen better?
I think it's very interesting. I was at North Ohio this weekend, and a pastor made he threw on the table this very interesting proposal to me. It was not proposed, an idea. He's like, have you thought of this? And I said, no. And he said, Joe, with your expertise, you know, what do you know? Not expert. I don't think I'm an expert. But he said, that's how he said it. I said, you know, your knowledge, what you do already in the online church. Have you thought about actually being an online pastor for like 5-6 churches at the same time?
Yeah.
And you know, you'll be employed by 5-6 churches in a much reduced rate for each church, but they would be able to have you as the online pastor. And it's kind of funny because it never hit me like that in thinking of, you know, running online ministries for different ministries at the same time. But it hit me like the possibility of it, like actually this is possible.
Well, we already do that with teaching.
Yeah.
Like, for example, this past Sunday, we had Francis Chan at our church, right?
Yeah.
For the past 2 weeks, he's been in Kansas City. He was at like 3 or 4 other churches.
Exactly.
So in essence, he's already doing what you just described. It's just a different role. So instead of having a teaching pastor, like itinerant teaching pastor that goes to one church, to one church, to one church and teaches there, you have an online campus pastor that ministers to different congregations, almost like the old circuit riding preachers did of the day.
Yeah.
It's really not all that different.
So do you think churches is still far away from looking at online church? Because I think there's a proprietary thing there. I think churches look at the online church as a very—
The only thing that's proprietary, I think, is that pastor's intimate knowledge of what his people need today.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I don't know that you could get away from. And it's almost like a fatherly, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a fatherly thing where
it's a pastor.
I know what my kids need.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's the pastor's heart, right? That is proprietary in the sense that only that guy on the ground is going to know what his people need, right? Or I shouldn't say on the ground. It's like whatever the relational— the thing is that relationships up until this new internet age have been largely mediated by geography.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason why you're best friends in high school is because you live together in the same school district, right? But what if your school was online and your best friend lived across the country? Like a lot of kids today have really good friends that they play Fortnite with hours every day.
Absolutely.
Yes. And they're really good friends. Why? Is it because of geography? No, it's because of time.
Yeah.
Time and relationships go together.
Yeah.
And what happens is that we have used geography to facilitate the amount of time people can spend together because you see each other, right?
Yeah.
Geography in the internet world doesn't matter. You can spend time with people regardless of where they live and create relationships. So that being the case, I'm going to like back up a little bit to what I was saying. What could be proprietary is that pastor's knowledge and the relational equity that he has built and with what his people need. That is always going to be proprietary. I don't know how you're going to get around that. However, if the pastor is humble enough to recognize that while I might know exactly what my people need, I may not be the best person to give that to them. It might be that someone else says it better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I could cherry pick that specific content that is exactly what my people need to hear. Now, I am the curator of that content, and that curation only I can do. But the content, that is becoming commoditized. Just like music has been commoditized, mm-hmm. and you can do it any kind of way. I think sermon content and spiritual content is becoming commoditized through podcasting, right now media, online church. It's all there. Where people get stuck is not in finding content. It's in knowing what content is going to help me most today. And that could be the primary job of the pastor, whether he's online or in a house church somewhere, cherry picking whatever kind of buffet of whoever the speaker happens to be. If we all got together as the Big C Church and said, you know what? I've got a really good sermon on Ephesians. It's life-changing. People have told me that. You can use it and just see where it goes.
I people ask me, what's the primary job of online pastor? And I said, you know, today is really to look for ways, to look for opportunities to connect with people. There's tons of ways to do that online. So the online pastor's primary job is, let me find different ways to connect with people. But the end goal is connect with people. And you know, pastors ask me, say, well, how that actually works? I said, well, that's the ministry side of online church.
Right.
And that's
not technical.
No, and that's the one aspect of online church that humanizes the technology. Right. That's why you got to just take that away from, that's when it doesn't become about the technology anymore. That's when ministry comes in. So if ministry is not present on your online church, you have not had a chance to humanize technology enough to connect with people, because that's the goal. But then in his mind is like, now I'm confused, because, you know, I never heard of this in Bible college. Like, Bible college taught me to look at people's eyes and, you know, and react based on people's responses and all that good stuff. And I think that's the challenge today for a lot of pastors, is like, they still have a hard time believing. I think that church can actually really, really happen. Church the way they know. Church the way they learned. That church can really happen unless I'm in front of people and I can see their faces and I can react with them, and they can I honestly think that, you know, I try to be sympathetic here with the pastors. So I usually try to tell them, listen, that's okay. It's a whole new season. We, like, again, it's 10 years in 1 year, and you didn't have like this low progression of things for you to get.
Right. Yeah. That's the hard part.
And I think that's,
we didn't have 10 years to figure it out.
No,
we got 1 year to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that window's closing.
And now we're in it. Now we're in it. You're right. We're closing, and the windows is closing. We're in it. We got to make it happen. And it's moving. It feels like sometimes moving faster than the day before. So I think it's important for pastors, churches, to look for information, to look for knowledge, to look for people that can actually help them to see the opportunity. The opportunity is real. I think churches, I don't know, do you use Google Grant ads?
Mm-hmm.
We use them, and it's kind of funny because, you know, even in my own church, people are like, is this really working? I said, hold on, give me a second here. And let's look at the numbers. Let's look at the data. And I had to sit down with my entire staff, and I said, hey, let me show you some numbers. I don't think you guys understand. I have access to all these numbers all day long. You guys don't have it. Let me show you, so you guys can help make this better. You can help the experience. And turns out, to make a long story short, they learned that during the month of June, we had 130 people stop on our website for the very first time ever in one day. That's the daily average. And they're like, oh, hold on. I say, you understand? So there's things we got to take action here to connect with people. We got an opportunity to connect with people.
Yep.
We're not using it. We're absolutely not using it. And that creates this kind of like, everybody stopped everything. And I'm saying, at that point, student pastors in the room, children's pastors in the room, worship guys in the room. And now I got, do you know what I mean? I got all of them on the same page. Like, they're all collaborating at that moment to what this website is. We got to redo the website. What needs to look like? Because, and I said, guys, today's Monday. By the end of today, another 140 people are going to stop by without the right opportunity to connect. And that really hit them. That really hit, that took home. So that was what I had to do to get my entire staff rallying around, we got this online thing. It's happening. And I mean, it was funny because 2 weeks later, the children's programming, they create new things. Like they went up, it went up, the quality mm-hmm. and the content. And my student guy now is looking for, I know different ways to do this. I got to do this differently. And it was very interesting moments when they saw the numbers, but I showed the numbers with a very clear objective to see, here's what we're missing, to connect with people in a very unique way. And I think, I wish churches would understand that. The potential online, it's crazy because people are searching all day long for answers. The mm-hmm. actually, the church got those answers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the church just got these answers that people are looking for, but mm-hmm. they are not reachable right now because we're not paying attention to those questions, right? We're not paying attention to those searches. And I'm thinking, okay, how can we change that? How can we change that scenario? And I think it's for the church to embrace the online ministry as the future of global outreach from your backyard all the way to China.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Online Pastor Coach Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, onlinepastorcoaching.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, and many other podcast platforms so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. If you like this show, you might want to check out our ebook, A Local Church with a Global Reach. Joey and Jason are available for private coaching. Just send us a message. Now go make a global impact for the kingdom. Until next time.